Bonjour and welcome to the Good Life France podcast, everything you want to know about France and more. I'm Janine Mosh, I'm an author and travel writer, and though I was born in London in the UK, I now live in a tiny village in the far north of France, and my home is turning into a sort of zoo. This week, my husband Mark brought home two more puppies who needed a home. We already have 2 1-year-old Labradors, Ronnie and Reggie Cray. We have 8 cats, a rescue dove with a broken wing, 30-something chickens, geese, ducks, and a rescue hedgehog called Charlie. But we're lucky to live in the countryside and we have a very big garden and plenty of room in our hearts. So welcome to Lady Ella and Nina Simone, two little fluffy bundles of fun.
Bonjour, I'm Olivier, but you can call me Ollie if it's easier for you, and I know it is. That's okay. I've been living in the UK for 20 years now, but as you can probably hear, I'm French. But how French? That is the question nowadays. If we play the game who is the Frenchest with Janine, I'm not sure I will win anymore, so we won't.
I think we should.
No, I'm too scared. What I'm sure about, though, is that I love France, its culture, its food, and so much more. So the more we talk about it, the better. And that's exactly what we are doing in this podcast. Talking of which, what's on this episode menu, Janine?
Well, a couple of episodes ago, we answered a listener's question about chateaus, castles in France. And she said, how many are there? And the answer was more than a mind-boggling 40,000 castles. Now, we're often asked what are the most beautiful castles in France. So today, we're going to be talking all things French chateau. The oldest, the biggest, the most haunted, the prettiest, the chateaus with the amazing tales to tell, and chateaus that make you stop in your track because they are just so incredibly gorgeous.
The Good Life France podcast. Everything you want to know about France and more. With Janine Marsh and Olivier Geoffrey.
People always ask me what my favourite chateau is, and I mean, really, it's impossible to answer. There's just so many, but there are a few that I have a real soft spot for, and they're coming up in this podcast. So I'm going to start with one of my favourites, which is the Chateau of Vaux-le-Vicomte, which is in the Île-de-France, which is about 55 kilometres from the centre of Paris, so not very far, quite easy to get to. This castle is the largest private residence in France. It's owned by the de Vogüé family, and it is exquisitely beautiful, and it has the most amazing history. And you might have seen it on the telly and not even realise, because if you're a fan of the TV series Versailles, you know, that raunchy bonkbuster serial about the shenanigans of the royals and the aristos of Louis XIV's court, then you've probably seen Vaux-le-Vicomte, because much of the filming took place not at the Chateau of Versailles, as you might think. When the producers were putting things together, they did their homework on the look of the day. I mean, really, really well, from shoes and dresses, hairstyles, furnishings and architecture. And while the Chateau of Versailles might seem an obvious choice as the location for filming, in fact, the decor there is largely 18th century, so 100 years too late for the authentic look they were looking for. So Vaux-le-Vicomte has retained its 17th century beauty, and as the prototype and inspiration for the later Chateau de Versailles, it was the perfect place to film. If you haven't seen the series, by the way, it's very good. I think so anyway. The story of Vaux-le-Vicomte is one of passion, betrayal, corruption, and despair. It's a story which has also shaped the history of France. And when you walk through the kitchen, these like gorgeous copper pans, and they've got tables of food set out to show you what it looked like. And they've got beautifully furnished rooms with paintings and tapestries and gilded this and that. And in the gardens, well, they're just magnificent. They look just like they did when Le Nôtre, who was Louis XIV's favourite gardener, designed them. There really is an echo of the past here, and you just can't avoid it. So when you go through the grand gates and you climb the stairs in front of the courtyard, there, 352 years ago, stood the proud creator of the castle. He was a man called Nicolas Fouquet, and he was waiting to welcome his king, Louis XIV, to a visit. It was the 17th of August, 1661, a sweltering hot day. Fouquet had served Louis XIV well and loyally as his Minister of Finances, and that night, he hoped to wow the king by entertaining him in great style. Fouquet had brought together three greats from French history: Le Vaux, an architect, Le Brun, the painter, and Le Nôtre, the gardener. And it was the first time in the history of architecture and building that a property was built considering the look of the home and the garden together as a package. And it wasn't just fabulous, it was dazzling. It had taken 20 years to create, and we now know that it pretty much bankrupted Fouquet, but he was obsessed. He wanted everything to be perfect. And the night the king came, it wasn't quite finished. So he just said to the painters, you know, put your tools down, stop painting the ceilings. He went out to the garden. Masons, you know, clear up. They were still carving the statues around the castle. But he said, nope, clear it up. Just make everything look as good as you can and get out of the way before the king gets here. It wasn't finished, but it didn't matter. The result was stupendous. The king's carriage swept into the courtyard. He alighted and stood at the bottom of the stairs, looking up at Fouquet above him on the stairs, beaming, proud of his achievement. I mean, honestly, this was quite possibly the most beautiful castle in all of France that day. And that meant the fate of the minister and the chateau was sealed, because never again would anyone stand higher than Louis XIV or have a chateau more beautiful than his. Instead of staying the night in the suite of rooms that Fouquet had designed especially for him, one of the windows has a view over a giant crown in a lake. I mean, it's absolutely gorgeous. And he was supposed to wake up the next morning and see this crown, you know, to make him happy. But no, that didn't happen. The king cut short his visit, had dinner cooked by the great French cook Vatel, and then he went off in his carriage to his own chateau at Fontainebleau, which was a journey of about 3 hours in those days, although it doesn't take very long in the car now. Basically, he was just seething with jealousy. He was so resentful of Fouquet's opulent display of wealth. He was incensed about standing at the bottom of the stairs, looking up, and that left him vulnerable. I mean, he was 21 years old. He'd had lots of problems with his coming into his reign, and he didn't know who to trust and who not to trust, but he listened to the whispers of people who didn't want Fouquet in that position. They wanted to take over. And basically, he had Fouquet arrested 2 weeks after that visit, slung him in prison. Louis took everything in the chateau. He took the furniture, the paintings, the tapestries, the ornaments, beds, even the trees in their pots in the gardens. He took everything. And he also took Levaux, Lebrun, and Le Nôtre, the architect, the painter, and the gardener. And he commanded them to help him turn Versailles, which was just a glorified hunting lodge, into the most incredible palace that you see today. Poor old Fouquet, he went for a show trial, accused of swindling his royal master. I mean, they're pretty sure now, historians have gone through his books and looked at everything, they're pretty sure that he didn't swindle at all. He was honest. The crooked witnesses were rolled out, fake paperwork, jealous ministers who wanted the king's allegiance. They all plotted. And that meant poor Fouquet spent the rest of his life in prison and died 19 years later. And from that day, no king ever slept in this chateau. It took Mrs. Fouquet 10 years to get her castle back, and she did live there for a while until 1705, and then it got sold and resold, and then it was abandoned, and it was basically in ruins until a sugar baron, Alfred Sommier, bought it in the late 1800s, and he and his descendants, the de Vogüé family, have spent the last 140 years restoring and preserving this magnificent castle. I'm sorry, it's such a long story, isn't it? But wow, what an amazing story. Honestly, it deserves a long story, I hope you think.
Yes, it does. And I was thinking actually, wow, Janine Marsh is officially the biggest French chateau fan in the world.
Can I have a badge?
Yes. Okay, my turn now. I think my favorite chateau is the Chateau of Guédelon in Burgundy. It's a different chateau. You may know it from a UK TV series which followed its creation and progress. It's actually the idea behind it that I find fascinating. A team of about 50 builders building a medieval castle from scratch in the middle of a forest with the methodology and the tools used in the 13th century. Nothing more. Every craft needed to build a medieval castle is there. Stonemasons, carpenters, blacksmiths, tilers, weavers, dyers, rope makers, and many more, all working to revive the 800-year-old crafts and skills required to build such a castle. It even has a flour mill that has also been constructed from scratch with the aim of producing the same type of flour as in the Middle Ages. And that bit is based on the remains of a 12th century water mill found in the Jura region, not very far away. They even bake bread made from the Guédelon grain flour in the castle's oven. It's a folly, basically. It's crazy. It's one of those crazy projects, but it's fantastic. It started in 1997 as an idea of local French chateau restorer and owner Michel Guillot. He and his brother Jacques have a passion for historic buildings and for restoring them. And Gate Launch should be finished in 2025. You can visit it, of course, and I understand you can also apporter votre pierre à l'édifice, which literally translates to bring your own stone to the building. That means play your part, do your bit to help. Plus, a fun fact, some of the techniques that have been rediscovered here are being used in the reconstruction of Notre Dame in Paris.
I saw that program on the TV. It was a few years ago, and you're right. It is absolutely incredible what they've been doing. I didn't know they were using the, you know, the information they've learned there to help with Notre Dame. That's amazing. I think I have to go and see that one, Ollie.
Yes.
Well, I mentioned Fontainebleau, the chateau that Louis XIV went to from Vaux-le-Vicomte when he decided not to stay overnight. And it's not very far away, even though it took him 3 hours by horse and carriage, probably because he had to go through the forest and there were no roads then, you know, so a little bit bumpy ride. But Fontainebleau also has an astounding history. It's 500 years older than Versailles. The original chapel was consecrated by Thomas Becket, aka St. Thomas of Canterbury and Thomas à Becket. And this incredible place has more than 1,500 rooms. It's the only royal and imperial chateau in France that has been continuously inhabited for 8 centuries. So from the 12th century, when it was then a royal hunting lodge and surrounded by a vast forest, it was renovated, extended and embellished by various kings, queens, emperors and empresses until it became the extraordinary, enormous castle you can go and visit and ogle at today. It's always been one of the favourites of the royals. Francis Premier, the Renaissance king, Louis XIV, Marie Antoinette. There's actually beautiful, beautiful rooms. There's one really lovely boudoir of hers and a room in which she had a bed commissioned. Sadly, she never got to sleep on it. She lost her head before she had the chance. It was also a favourite of Napoleon Bonaparte. And there are lots of memories of the general. I mean, he's got his hat, the black hat they used to wear, some of his clothes, some of his personal belongings. I saw his son's cradle and his son's toys and little reading books and stuff. And I think for me, what I really love about this place is you get a sense of Napoleon the man. I mean, okay, he was, you know, Emperor of France. He loved bling and he loved power and money, but he was also a doting dad. You know, he loved his son. And you can tell that just by looking at the things that are there. And it's also here that we're on this gorgeous horseshoe shaped staircase in front of the castle. It was here that Napoleon said au revoir to his personal guard when he was exiled from France. This is a gorgeous, gorgeous castle full of truly stunning art, carpets, furniture. Oh, the carpets. Honestly, I've got carpet envy after I went there last week. Paintings, tapestries, superb gardens. I do actually think it's one of the best chateaus I've ever been to.
You've been told now.
Yeah. You heard it here.
Yes, exactly. Now for the oldest castle in France, which, like Guédelon, is in Burgundy. The Château de Tille was built, wait for it, 1,273 years ago. Yes.
Oh, Ollie, you make great trumpet noises. We have to build that in.
It's actually a bit of a ruin, but not that much for the age of the château. You can still see its beautiful shape. A majestic ruin, that's what it is. You can visit for free. It's in the town of Vic-sous-Tille, not far from Beaune, Dijon or Vézelay. There are loads of really old castles in France, some not much younger than this, like the castle of Montbazon in the Loire Valley. It was built between 991 and 996 AD, and its keep, a fortified tower, is 92 feet high. It was built by Foulquenérat, Count of Anjou, a region in the Loire Valley. He was famous for his many castles and his bad temper as well. He was part of the family line of the English House of Windsor, as well as the French monarchs. And another old castle, not too far away in the Loire Valley, is Le Château d'Angers in the town of the same name. Its outer walls are 10 feet thick, and it was considered impregnable in the day. It has unusual stripes of limestone and a darker stone called shit. No, not shit. God. When I read it for the first time, I thought, yeah, be careful there.
You go. We should leave that in. Schist. He means everyone.
It has 17 towers. Inside, you can see the oldest medieval tapestry in the world, La Tonture de l'Apocalypse, from the 14th century, depicting the biblical book of Revelation.
Those tapestries, they're just amazing. They really are. And there's also, if you go to visit the Château d'Angers, down the road at the Hôpital Saint-Jean, which is itself a masterpiece of Plantagenet Gothic architecture, there are some fabulous tapestries, well, much more modern. They're by an artist called Jean Lechat, and he was born in 1892. And the tapestries are called Le Chant du Monde. It's like a poetic and symbolic vision of the world in which the artist defines man's place within the universe. Sounds a little bit dry, but I promise you, they are extraordinary. You will never forget them once you've seen them. Right, so we're now moving on to the tallest castle in France and another one of my favourites. This is the Château de Brissac in the Loire. It is a whopping... I can do trumpet noises
not
too
bad,
early.
Not bad, not bad.
7 stories high. It's 48 metres, 157 feet high. And it is known as the Giant of the Loire Valley. It was first built in the 11th century. Oh, 1,000 years ago, and it's been updated and extended over the years. And records show that the family of the Dukes of Brissac moved in on May the 26th, 1502. Isn't that extraordinary? They actually know what day they moved in. Their descendants still live there to this day. I met the current Duke when I visited because he wanders about quite a lot and he says hello to everyone. And he's lovely. He's really down to earth. And I have to tell you that this chateau also has one of the most amazing bed and breakfast rooms I've ever seen. The Duke rents out a couple of these incredible rooms. They've got four-poster beds, tapestries and antiques. Oh, wonderful parquet flooring. I mean, it's like going to sleep in the past. It's just amazing. And he told me that in the morning, when you have breakfast there, he nips into the nearby town to pick up your croissants and then he serves them to you in your bedroom. That's amazing. I asked him how many rooms there were and he said he thinks that there are about 200, but it's quite hard to tell. And also, not only is this castle the most tallest in France, it's said to be one of the most haunted. So a gruesome double murder took place here in the 15th century. And the owner at that time, who was a Jacques de Brézé, caught his wife with her lover, and it said that he ran them both through with his sword, pinning their souls forever between the castle walls. And it is said that if you go there, you can hear their sighs on a dark night.
I'm not sure I like that. No, creepy. Okay, let's leave the Loire and head south to Dordogne now, where it's said you will find France's most haunted castle, the fairy tale pretty Château de Puymartin, between the lovely medieval towns of Sarlat and Les Aisies. This is another tale of a wife and a lover. It seems to have happened a lot in the old days. People sometimes claim to see La Dame Blanche, the white lady, running towards the Château's North Tower, haunted by the spirit of the owner's wife, Thérèse de Saint-Clar, who died after 15 years of being locked in a tiny room, poor her, in the Château's Tower in the 16th century. The story goes that her husband locked her up after he found out she had a lover. She paces the tower at night. Uh-huh, yes, she does.
Ooh. Blimey, there are quite a few apparently haunted castles in France, including Versailles. But I'm going to stop you there because we're not going to go include that in this podcast because it is just so enormous and there is so much to say that we're going to be doing a specific Versailles episode at some point.
Yeah, and Janine, I just need to point out because we Frenchies like to get our facts right. Versailles isn't actually a castle, it's a palace. And what is the difference, you may ask? I'll tell you. A castle is usually fortified and a residence too. And a palace, the word comes from Rome's Palatine Hill, where the rich and famous built luxurious houses. So the palace is not fortified. It's a statement home. Look at me, I'm rich and I am wonderful. That's what the palace says.
In case anyone just listened in at that point, didn't hear what came before and just heard Ollie say, look at me, I am rich and I am wonderful. He's not, great accent, eh? He's not bragging about himself, though no. He is wonderful. And actually, I just mentioned at this point that I have had quite a few emails from people telling me, quote, We love his wonderful silky tones. Strangely, I have not had a single email about my London Cockney accent.
Oh, I do love your Cockney accent, Jenny.
Thank you. I have one fan. It's you, Ollie. Thank you.
And let's carry on saying that I'm rich, talking about fans.
Dreams do come true sometimes, Ollie. Anyway, back to Dordogne again for one of the most high-up castles in France. It's the lovely Château de Beynec. It's not quite nosebleed high, but if you don't like heights, do not hang out over the ramparts at this one. This castle rises hundreds of feet above the Dordogne River. It's within eyesight of its adversary, Castelnau, which is even higher up and just minutes up the river. Now, both fortresses were focal points of the Hundred Years' War. And to understand which country, France or Britain, controlled which castle, you'll need to read a book, because there's way too much to explain here. Or maybe we'll do a podcast one day. When you go there, you'll see signs to reach the castle by climbing a twisting cobblestone path flanked by dreamy stone cottages. Well, they don't tell you. You don't need to walk up that steep path. There's a road going up to a parking lot near the castle entrance.
There is one palace in France that's not like the others. It's the Palais des Papes, the Pope's palace in Avignon. There was a time in the early 1300s when the seat of the Catholic Church was in Provence, not in Rome, and the popes built themselves a palace. In fact, it is the largest Gothic palace on earth. Breathtakingly beautiful, with ceremonial halls, chapels, papal apartments, and a kitchen so big you could roast up to 50 oxen at once in there.
Wow. Can you imagine the heat in a kitchen if you were cooking 50 oxen? Good Lord. Right, talking of large, one of the largest is Chambord in the Loire Valley. And it isn't for nothing that the Loire Valley is known as the Valley of Kings, as you can tell, so many chateaus. Now, this castle, Chambord, is teeming with turrets and towers. It gleams the white stone contrast with the pointy black slate roof. This is, frankly, a magnificent display of power and taste. I mentioned François Premier, Francis I in English, earlier. And that he was known as the Renaissance King. And that's because he really embraced the whole French Renaissance style and pretty much kickstarted it in France. He invited Leonardo da Vinci to come and stay in his castle, Clos Lutier, in the Loire Valley. And Leonardo said, yes, please, I will. And he left Italy riding on a donkey, carrying his belongings, including the Mona Lisa painting, which Francois put in his bathroom where he could see it. That's a true story. And Leonardo lived the rest of his life in France. Anyway, François built Chambord as a symbol of his power. 426 rooms, 282 fireplaces, and 83 staircases, including a double helix spiral staircase, which was said to be designed by Leonardo, but that can't be proved, is so big. And it was so expensive with its ornate carved ceilings and walls that it was never finished in François's lifetime. But it's absolutely glorious, just as he intended.
Okay, now, if you're in Paris and you want to do a castle day trip, it's possible too. You've got plenty of choice, but these are our top four. Chenonceau is about an hour from Paris Montparnasse to Tours, and then 25 minutes by local train to Chenonceau train station, which is a 400-meter walk from the castle ticket office. So very practical. The chateau is famous for its flowers. A master florist creates magical floral displays in every room, many of the blooms grown in the castle's own gorgeous gardens. It's a fairy tale pretty castle again, beautifully furnished, and has the most amazing on-site restaurant, L'Orangerie. This 16th century castle built on the River Cher with a lovely iconic bridge commissioned by Diane de Poitiers, mistress of Henry II, and enlarged by Catherine de Médicis, his wife, once she ousted Diane. The Palace of Versailles is also not far from Paris, easy to reach by train. But as we said, Versailles is coming up with its own episode, which will last about 12 hours, I reckon.
I think it might do. See, well, I had a flower arranging lesson with the florist at that castle, Château de Chenonceau, and it was amazing. Definitely another one of my favourites. So another easy day trip castle is the Château de Chantilly in Picardy, one of the most beautiful Renaissance castles in France. And it's really easy to reach from Paris. It's 23 minutes on a train from Gare du Nord. And then you can take a free shuttle bus or even, you know, take a 30-minute walk from the station through the town, which is really, really pretty and well worth a visit. The Château de Chantilly has an opulent interior. It's got an incredible art collection, a stunning stables there as well, and a horse show, and gorgeous gardens with a beautiful little hamlet, which is actually older than Versailles and which inspired Marie Antoinette. And also, do not miss the Chateau restaurant. And if you're there in the summer, have strawberries and chantilly cream, which is said to have been invented here. Have chantilly cream with anything when you go there, actually. And the fourth castle, which you can really easily reach from Paris, is, as we mentioned earlier, Vaux-le-Vicomte.
Got a question about France? Well, ask the experts. We reply to you in each episode. And we do it for free. Well, we only got another 39,982 or so castles to go, and we'll have covered them all. But we're almost out of time, and it is that bit again where we answer a listener's question. So, Janine, what have we been asked this week?
Oh, this week's question is from Linda Sherwood of Vancouver in Canada. And she says, I read that in France, it is the law to buy a ticket for your snail if you take it on the train in France. Is that true? Well, yes, it's a strange question, all right. But we always do our very best to answer every single question that we're sent. So, Olivier, true or false? Snails travelling on French trains must be ticket holders.
So, just want to clarify before, Linda, are you planning to bring a snail from Vancouver to France? I wouldn't advise it. I don't have a snail. I have a cat, but I know it is true, as a matter of fact, but only for snails that are alive and without garlic and butter sauce.
I don't have a pet snail either, although I do have a lot of snails in my garden. I have a lot of other animals, 4 dogs, 8 cats, hedgehog, dove, geese, chicken, ducks, and a partridge in a pear tree. Not really, not that last one. But no snail. But Linda, Ollie is in fact right. It's true. French law states, and I quote, all animals travelling on the rail network must have a ticket. And in fact, a few years ago, a passenger with a snail, and I don't know why he had a snail with him, perhaps he was going to a snail race. We have an annual snail race in my village, so maybe he was on his way here. Anyway, this passenger was on the train and he had a snail, a live one, not in garlic and butter sauce, yes. And he was actually fined because he didn't have a ticket for it. And this was reported in all the newspapers and everyone was like, oh, for goodness sake, you know, it's a bit much. And they did actually, I will say, they did eventually drop the fine. So, yeah, if you're bringing your snail to France or if you're traveling with a snail in France on the trains, buy a ticket.
That was a great question, Linda. I love it. Feel free to keep sending those questions in, please. We love to answer them. Send them to janine@thegoodlifefrance.com, janine@thegoodlifefrance.com, and we'll do our best to help. This is the Good Life France podcast. Oh là là! Le podcast The Good Life France.
Thank you so much for listening and a huge thank you to everyone sharing this podcast. We're very, very thankful to you. We really are. Now, we've got a growing list of podcasts that you can listen to on all things French, from how to be a Parisian in less than 1 hour to cheese. But in the meantime, for more things French and fabulous, from culture and history to food and wine and everything in between, you can find me on thegoodlifefrance.com, where you can subscribe to my fun newsletter, this podcast, and my award-winning free magazine at magazine.thegoodlifefrance.com. Yes, sometimes the best things in life really are free. Just ask the more than 12 million readers who enjoyed the last 5 issues. And there's a new issue coming out very, very shortly. And now, just a little shameless plug for my 3 books, My Good Life in France, My 4 Seasons in France, and Toujours la France. Yes, I really do love France. That's not a book. I'm just saying that. I've had the honour to be nicknamed the female Peter Mail, you know, the author who wrote A Year in Provence. Thank you, whoever said that. It's such a wonderful compliment. Anyway, my books are on Amazon and in all good bookshops online and in high streets.
And obviously, I strongly recommend all of them.
Thank you.
And you can find me playing French chanson on the radio station Paris Chanson. More details in a sec, right at the end of this episode.
And I strongly recommend Paris Chanson.
Thank you, Janine.
But for now, it's au revoir from me.
And goodbye from me.
Speak to you soon.
The Good Life France podcast. Available on all podcast platforms. On thegoodlifefrance.com and on parischanson.fr. the most beautiful French songs of the 40s, 50s and 60s, only on Paris Chanson. Available on your mobile, smart TV, computer and smart speaker 24/7. Visit parischanson.fr to find out more. That's PARISCHANSON.fr.